In our culture, we learn through stories. But what if the stories we hear don't match the reality of life? What if the stories we hear every day that tell us how to write the narrative of our lives actually lead us to a false narrative? My name is Tim Kroll, and on this podcast, you will hear real stories, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Real people sharing the hard times, the bends in the roads along life's journey. If you're ready to join a community of other real people who are writing the narrative of their lives, then go to narrative.live and join the community. Now let's dive into today's show. I've got a good friend here. Actually, Josh and I have talked several times. We met through I do a lot of networking, as most of you guys know, but we met through a networking group, and I love the fact of being able to network and find out a little bit more about individuals. And again, part of that finding out about individuals is this narrative and finding out a little bit more about the history, the behind the scenes. What was it like growing up? I love being able to hear that. And again, Josh, we've talked before, so I'm really grateful that you're here. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for taking the time to be able to contribute to our audience.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you again, Tim.
So just with everything, I love jumping into this because I kind of feel this is a spotlight on Josh, and I love to be able to give that to you. But here we are. We met, let's say, in an elevator. You got 30 seconds and somebody says, who is Josh? Not necessarily what you do, but who is Josh?
Well, I am the oldest of nine kids. My parents were I guess you could say Jesus people, got saved in the 70s, Jesus movement, and then promptly decided to move out into the country, homeschool their kids, have nine of them. And that's kind of where I got my start. So I've done a lot in my career and in my life, but I very early on went into sort of illustration, graphic design. That led to web design, which led to marketing, digital marketing, and user experience design. And that's what I do a lot of right now.
Yeah. And I know just from previous conversations, you care deeply about your family. And I know that's been a big topic that we've discussed. So I know that that's something else that's kind of part of who you are. You just love being with your family.
Absolutely. So I'm married to an Amazon woman. Met a gal a couple of years ago that actually moved to South Dakota from Brazil. So we've been married for 3 years now. I have a daughter from a previous marriage who's 14, freshman in high school. So we have a lot of fun.
And so you basically are married to Wonder Woman? Is that kind of what I'm hearing? That sounds like...
That's the way I like to present that, yes.
You're married to the best woman in the world.
I don't know
that's
the
awesome.
Audience can see this, but I literally have a shirt on that says, my wife is Brazilian, I fear nothing, basically.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, let's jump into kind of the growing up phase. Man, it sounds like, especially with nine kids and being the oldest, you probably got tons of responsibility that was dumped on you. Just I say that because I kind of had that same situation. I don't mean like dump, but good stuff. So I think there's going to be a lot to unpack here, and I'm kind of excited to hear about that. And then just as far as how you viewed life and the beliefs and the formation and the perspective that you had when you're ready to, before you were actually an adult and stepping into that. So what was that going to be like? What did you think was going to happen?
So as like, you're right, I had a lot of early responsibility, especially taking care of younger siblings. And then my parents actually had a couple of kids with special needs that are my younger siblings. So I ended up being a third parent in some instances, just sort of helping that because that's a lot to manage. So I did grow up sort of feeling a lot of the weight of responsibility for my younger siblings. I was also, as many firstborns are, a pleaser. I want to do everything right. I want to get, you know, told good job. And so I suppose I grew up feeling like if I just did everything right and made all the right choices and followed the rules, that everything would turn out well. And so, you know, that is something that it took me a little bit to unlearn. And life did a good job of helping teach me otherwise.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that from the aspect of what impact did that have on the way that you were acting and the way that you were preparing for life? Because I I know I've struggled with some of that myself, with wanting to make sure that I'm pleasing everybody. But in your perspective, what impact did that have? What beliefs did that form in your own personal life?
The biggest, I would say, negative impact is that it made me very risk averse. Mm. And growing up, as a Christian kid in a Christian home, and I am a Christian, but I had a particular view of the world that, again, you just make the right choices and do the right things, and the right things are going to happen to you in the future. Somewhat legalistic, whether that was from my parents or I just sort of absorbed that from the people around me or came to that conclusion on my own as a kid, I don't know. But where I landed was just sort of being very cautious and not wanting to take a lot of risks, not wanting to do anything wrong, make mistakes. And that ended up in retrospect sort of holding me back and keeping me from maybe trying some things that I wasn't sure I was going to succeed at or be good at, especially early on in life. So I did realize that, you know, at some point and started trying new things. And now I would say I'm a calculated risk taker.
Well, that's kind of cool. And I see Buzz sitting in the background, you know, he's thinking like to infinity and beyond. So it's a calculated risk there. But the impact, was there something that you saw in your own life, or was there a risk that you saw in your own life that possibly at one point you failed at? And so therefore it was, you know, I'm not really willing to take the risk because I'm afraid of that failure. Or was there something different that was going on that created that whole aspect of, I just do not want to take risks?
That's a good question. I suppose that because family is important to me and relationships are important to me, I really wanted to have a good marriage, find the right person. I think I absorbed that idea that there's that, you know, maybe one right person out there for you and you just have to find it, which is not true, but it's a very common sort of thing to think, especially when you're young and very romantic. And so I did have that attitude. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't date for quite a while. And that I would say that was an aspect of sort of being risk averse. I didn't want to spend a lot of time dating somebody that I wasn't pretty sure I would want to be with or would end up with. And that in particular was something that, you know, got from a little bit of a legalistic Christian culture, but also just sort of my own personality. And it wasn't something people necessarily told me wasn't right, but I waited a long time to take risks in relationships, especially romantic relationships. And then the other area would be, I suppose, friendships and it being hard for me to make friends. I actually had a lot of friends that were my parents' friends' kids that I never really had to go out of my way to make friends with. And so that was a skill that I had to learn later on in life and felt very risky to me to build friendships with somebody that I didn't know very well.
So was there something in life that forced you out of that little bubble and forced you to take risk? Was there something that, what was the shift moment? Was there a circumstance? Was there a move? What changed? How did that all start to come about? And was it a hard change, or was it a kind of a wake up moment change? Like what, let's kind of dive into that a little bit.
Sure. So so I grew up in northern Minnesota in the country with, you know, a lot of people that I knew and saw on a regular basis through church and family events and things like that. And then my parents moved me away from that to near the Minneapolis area to take care of my grandma, who wasn't doing so well. And she was sort of out in the country. We lived in part of her large house. But what that created was a real sense of isolation, because then I didn't have any friends. And so I had a season of loneliness in my life that I realized that I needed to learn how to make connections with new people. And I would say this is like early teen years, 12, 13, 14, very formative. Then we moved eventually back up to the Fargo-Moorhead area in northern Minnesota again. And I had previously been homeschooled. I then entered public school, and that's, I suppose, the time that I was really, you know, dropped into the deep end in terms of trying to figure out an entirely new, like, social structure and friend structure and that sort of thing. So in terms of making friends and building relationships, that was very sink or swim for me, and I had to learn fast. So I did that. I went to a tech school after that, and then got involved in local church, youth group, and that sort of thing. And that's where I sort of, you know, created my first group of friends that weren't just handed to me.
Well, I'm curious, so dropping in like that, you grew up in a situation where you're pretty much, your friends were just your family friends that came from your parents, and then you get dropped into a situation where there are no friends. So there, you said you had to learn pretty quick. What were some of the lessons you had to learn pretty quick?
I mean, everything. I think most people take for granted that they forgot they learned in elementary school, whether it's, you know, cliques or social hierarchies, or, you know, why would somebody treat me that way? And people don't always mean what they say, and, you know, dumb stuff that happens in any high school.
Mm-hmm.
And not having really grown up in that environment, what table to sit at, and, you know, where you're sitting with this group and that group and what it means. And, you know, I had a crush on a girl across the cafeteria, and I was deathly afraid to sit over there because I didn't know what the rules were. Like, should I sit down? Should I say hi? Should I not? Like, you know, everything that you do have to figure out as a kid.
So was it social rules? Is that what you mean?
Partly, like, and partly social, just like my own sense of self-confidence and sort of not knowing, being afraid people wouldn't like me, not knowing how I came across to other people, not necessarily knowing, you know, how to strike up a conversation with a, you know, a cute girl, that sort of thing. You know, it's kind of basic stuff, but it was learning a lot of that all at once.
Yeah, but I don't think you're alone in that. I everybody that I talk to at some point in time in their life look at that and they say they lacked the value of themselves, or they lack, sure, some of the self-confidence. And so as you look at those kinds of things, and again, I don't mean to belabor the point, but I think this is something that everybody who listens to the podcast or listens to us on YouTube, at some point in time, they're going to deal with this. At some point in time, they're going to look at that and say, yeah, that was me. I struggled knowing how to fit in, knowing, like you just said, where to sit at a table, where, how to talk to, mm-hmm, somebody. And what if I get rejected? Then what? And what if, you know, I get made fun of? And I guess that's part of, how did you handle that in your own mind of being able to say, okay, I've got to navigate this. I've got to figure it out. Were there things that you were able to go back and rely on, be able to go back and say, well, I can find confidence in this, or I'm really good at that, or was there a friend that stepped in? Like, what was going on there?
I would say that sort of finding a group of friends that all went to the same youth group that happened to be from my school was a big part of it. And, you know, kind of finding my people, and then, you know, figuring out other aspects of relationships and that sort of thing. Communication's always been important to me, and I mean, that's why I'm in marketing. And so,
right,
I did. It's not like I didn't succeed at that. It's just that it was sort of a very intentional, intense sort of couple years of my life where I felt like a little bit like an alien trying to, you know, figure out how to act human. Have you ever seen the show Resident Alien? It's kind of like that, where a guy looks human but is constantly bewildered by how these people talk to each other in this, you know, weird small town. So I did feel a little bit like that as a high schooler.
Yeah. So was there any other shifts or changes? It sounds like that was a large lesson to learn just in how to interact with people. But then stepping out of high school, college age type area, or even just, you know, just fresh out of college, was there any other switches or shifts in the perspective of things that you learned or things that you had to adjust after growing up under parents and, like you said, kind of almost sheltered in a way? what was life like after you kind of stepped out of that?
Sure. After high school, very shortly after high school and graduating from my tech school that I went to, I ended up moving again, this time to South Dakota, and helping start a retail furniture store with my dad. And I'd previously worked sort of entry-level warehouse position at this furniture store in high school, which my dad managed. And then he moved and started his own store that he then owned. And I had some experience in the warehouse. So I became the warehouse manager of a large, like, multi-million dollar furniture store operation at 20 years old, which was kind of interesting. So that was another dropped into the deep end, learn quick sort of experience. And was managing people twice my age in the warehouse and delivery operations, and doing service work and scheduling deliveries and loading and unloading trucks and dealing with vendors and all of those sorts of interesting things.
And so once again, you dropped in and you're like, hey, dude, I got to just figure this out. I just got to figure out exactly. What maybe, I don't know, do you have like a real quick story or something that you can share about a colossal mistake that you made? Because that's what this show is all about, is just being real. Is there something that you can recall about?
I've blocked all of those out, Tim. I don't know if I can recall any of this.
Oh, I'm sure there's got to be at least one in there we can uncover.
Oh, sure. I do think that there was a time when I personally had to drive the delivery truck. First, a positive learn quick experience. We were short a delivery driver, and I had never driven a stick shift before. Let alone a truck. So I somehow had to get this truck from the service department back to our store. So I learned how to drive a stick in a large stick shift delivery vehicle down the middle of our main street to try to get back to our store. That's how I learned to drive a stick, and I didn't kill anybody, so it worked out. But so that was a fun experience. But I did also, in terms of a failure, I do remember backing into at least one person's sort of roof overhang and crushing it and having to figure out how to get that, you know, covered by our insurance in the store.
Oh, so what was the greatest lesson you learned in that maybe not in that situation exactly, but being dropped in the deep end, what was the greatest lesson you learned just from that experience?
I mean, I learned that I could learn fast, and I never really felt that I couldn't figure something out if I really had to, just from those experiences, which is great and very valuable. On the other hand, the other side of that coin is, I ended up saying yes to a lot of things, just going, yeah, I can probably figure that out, where, you know, sometimes you can't say yes to everything and end up just wearing too many hats and doing way too many different kinds of things for different people. And that's not always the best way to, you know, live life or build a career either.
Well, I mean, let's tie that into this whole people-pleasing aspect. You said that was one of the biggest challenges as far as growing up and a lesson that you learned. And so you tie that to, yes, I can learn everything fast, and I'm a people-pleaser. So I'm sure that probably got you in trouble a couple of different times.
Absolutely. I mean, I can recall an instance where I sort of transitioned out of the furniture industry and into working for a design agency that was my previous position. And because I could just sort of figure things out if our server broke, or if, even though I was hired as a designer and that was my main job, if something happened with the computer, they knew I knew how to fix it. And so that I'd end up sort of being IT or server management, or, you know, building our storage system for our client files and that sort of thing, which really wasn't the thing that I was best at. But then I would sort of have all these like little things that I was responsible for or felt responsible for, rather than, you know, focused on probably what added the most value to the company, which was, you know, designing and building websites, for instance.
Yeah. So in that, I'm looking at both the business life that you've been experiencing. And it seems like a lot of guys actually get into that position as well, where they take on too much responsibility and they feel like everything is relying on their shoulders. Sometimes that weight gets to be the weight of the world. And then we get overwhelmed and then we have challenges with just our health and all kinds of things. Between that, the people pleasing, but you can figure things out, which is a good thing, right? I mean, that's a positive out of that. You can figure things out really fast. Was there a shift in your mind when you said, look, I just can't do all of the things all the time and can't take all of the responsibility all the time? Was there a point in time when you felt like you were just about ready to break and you were just done? And then what did you do if that was the case? Or how are you operating now that you've realized that you're doing some of that stuff?
Sure. So I can give you two answers for that. One of them is relational and one of them would be more career-wise. The relational aspect relates to my previous marriage. And I took probably way more responsibility for the success of that relationship and that marriage, and even like responsibility for my partner's emotions and reactions to things than I should have, and was quite codependent in that respect. And that did not have a good outcome. And so I did learn a lot from that experience. And I think I, you know, learned a lot about myself, about relationships in general, healthy relationships. So am, you know, enabled to be much more successful in my relationships currently, just both in my current marriage and family members and friends and that sort of thing. Sort of basic having good boundaries around knowing what's, you know, what's your thing to own and what's someone else's responsibility in a relationship and an emotion. So that was a big learning experience for me. And then in business, my previous position, I really did want to start specializing in digital marketing and more the communication aspect of design and marketing and strategy. And my employer just wasn't interested in that, or wasn't sure how to grow that part of that company or create a position where that would be something I could spend more time focusing on. So what I ended up doing was starting a digital marketing agency with a couple of friends that ended up becoming my agency. So I took it over and they went to do other things. But I was able to focus on strategy, storytelling, getting to know an audience and communicating effectively with them and that sort of thing. So I went from just building websites to helping people figure out how to get people to their websites, helping people figure out how to convert website traffic into sales and that sort of thing, which was much more interesting to me. So that was a big shift in my focus. And then, of course, I was also then running a business, which made me wear a bunch of different hats that I wasn't previously wearing.
Yeah.
But at least in terms of creative work, I was much more focused.
Mm. So what do you do now? Obviously, there's a lot of lessons learned there. And you've touched on basically the two folds of our life, the relationship side as well as the business side. What are your practices at this time to maintain that healthy relationship that you're talking about as far as within the family and with your all of those that are connected in the immediate family? And then the second part of that same question, what do you do in the business aspect to, again, maintain some of those? The boundaries are there for the family and the boundaries are there for the business. How do you maintain that? I guess I call it balance between the boundaries and responsibilities and all the things that are necessary to have healthy relationships.
Sure. A lot of that from the relational standpoint is just having lots of conversations about that. You know, I'm fortunate to be married to a woman who's also been through a lot and grown a lot through those experiences. And so, you know, we sort of met at similar places in life where we were able to just talk about those things honestly and, you know, recognize when something was not right or unhealthy or needed to be worked through in just a much more positive way than I'd experienced before. So I'm very thankful for that. With my daughter, you know, we have lots of those conversations. And of course, her being in high school and, you know, having all sorts of that teen drama, high school drama going on, and sometimes wanting to get involved in things that she shouldn't get involved in and trying to fix other people's problems and that sort of thing. And dealing with boys, all of those are just create opportunities for for those kinds of conversations around boundaries. And you're responsible for your part.
Wonderful, constructive conversations.
They're responsible for their part. Yeah, exactly. Which is very rewarding. And, you know, it didn't always go well, especially when she was younger. But I think now she's at an age where she's starting to, you know, make a few of her own mistakes and then, you know, realize maybe dad's not so dumb after all. And maybe I should talk to him about these things. And so that's kind of fun. And I enjoy those conversations. And then in the career sphere, I would say that that's a constant balance. Like there's always an opportunity to just take on something you shouldn't, or, you know, say yes more to more things that you should, or what have you. So just as an example, earlier today, I was on a call with a potential client just asking some basic questions about websites and some marketing, and then continues to sort of, in a sense, get as much as she can out of me and take up as much time as she can without getting a bill. And you kind of realize, you got to kind of figure out where that point is where you're, you know, transitioning from, I'm just kind of giving you some basic advice, and are we going to work together or not? Are you just going to keep calling me and, you know, asking me to help you figure out a problem on your own? And so just sort of figuring out how to frame that conversation, be clear up front, sort of where we're at, what expectations are in terms of the relationship, without being weird and awkward and, you know, just holding space for that.
Yeah.
That's an ongoing thing. And I do that with current clients. I do that with new potential clients. It's challenging, but I am getting better at it.
Yeah, I hear you. I feel that challenge, that rub between, hey, I do want to help you, but at the same time, there comes a point in time when this boundary comes into play, and I just can't go beyond that. So that's great advice. Great stuff there as far as where you're at. How can people get in contact with you? If somebody said, hey, dude, I like this guy, whether I engage with you on a digital aspect or a digital marketing aspect, or if it's just like, hey, I really feel like I resonate with Josh, how can people get in contact with you?
So there are two ways. I suppose the easiest way is to go to my personal website. It's joshlatterell.com, LATTERELL.com. That's just a basic personal brand / jumping off point for some of the things that I'm involved in right now. And then the company that I run is called Elm, ELM Digital Marketing. And you can just go to elmdigitalmarketing.com for that and contact me either way.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. I'm going to give you the chance. And I always do this with everybody, but what is the one thing, if you were either talking to yourself as a younger child or somebody that was just coming out of high school, what's the one thing you want to leave, or you want the one thing that you want somebody to walk away with from the conversation today?
Somebody just coming out of high school?
I'm leaving it open. I always do this. I leave it completely open. Whatever you feel like you want to share, whether it came from today's conversation or if there's something like, man, I wish I would have told myself, go back in time and tell myself this, whatever you want to say.
I would say the key theme, and this really relates to, I think, the theme of this podcast, the narrative, is that we are writing a story with our lives. And because I'm a person of faith, I believe our story is a subplot in God's story, in the big story that he's writing. And it's a co-creative act. It's something that he's invited us in to sort of help write together. He didn't have to. But he values working together with us, just like you value working on a project, a car or something with your kid, even though you really don't need their help. It's valuable to have that time and to share that work with them. So I believe God has that same attitude towards us. Mm. He also is okay with us making mistakes, and that doesn't scare him. And, you know, it's not going to surprise God that you fall flat on your face, because he's able to bring good out of everything. So I would say, be willing to take those risks, be willing to be wrong, and trust God for the ultimate outcome.
I love that. And it's such a great summary in regards to how the narrative is created, how we craft just get to experience the journey that this life is. Absolutely. So thanks again, man. I really, really, truly appreciate that. And for those that are listening, we will have notes in the show notes that will give you access to whether it's the Josh Lateral, the .com site, or your Elm Digital Marketing site. All of those things will definitely be in the notes. And man, just until next time, just everybody that's out there, and I say this every time, but I mean this from the bottom of my heart, if something touched you, something impacted you, I'd love to have you reach out either to myself or to Josh and just say, hey, this had an impact in our lives. So until next time, keep writing and crafting your story, keep writing and crafting your narrative and walking and experiencing that journey, because everybody's is just as critical, just as important, and just as valuable. Thanks for listening to today's show. But before you go, let me ask you a question. How would you like to be the author of your story? Take the next step now at www.narrative.live. Enter your details to connect with a community of others just like you that are tired of living under the false narrative. Finding your true story and writing your narrative, it will give you clarity, freedom of your day, and it just might change your life forever.